Welcome, folks. Thank you for joining the call. I'm Jason Walsh, Executive Director of the Blue Green Alliance, a partnership of some of the nation's largest labor unions and environmental groups. We are here today in recognition of Workers' Memorial Day. This is a day to honor and remember those who died from work-related injuries and illnesses. This day of remembrance was set on April 28th because it's the date that the Occupational Safety and Health Act, which created OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, came into effect in 1971. And yet, 49 years later, workers are confronting conditions that endanger their lives every day. In 2020, the major causes of work-related fatalities won't be falls from ladders or roofs. It will be from Americans being forced to work without adequate personal protective equipment or safety protocols in the midst of a deadly pandemic. While this is happening, the federal agency charged by Congress almost 50 years ago with protecting workers is largely missing in action. OSHA is treating essential workers, who, let's be clear, are disproportionately people of color, as if they're expendable workers. The agency has been putting out guidance periodically when public pressure forces them to, but guidance isn't going to make employers protect their workers. In OSHA's own words, a guidance is, quote, advisory in nature and not a standard or a regulation. OSHA is putting out guidance that is non-enforceable by design while workers are putting their lives on the line. What this pandemic has brought to light is a reality that faces working people every day. The laws and systems in place in this country to protect workers on the job are dangerously weak, and it is well past time to take action to strengthen them now. This has been a life and death issue for essential workers, but we're going to have to protect every worker as state and local governments attempt to reopen their economies now and in the weeks and months ahead. The actions we need to take to protect workers from COVID-19 are inseparable from the actions we need to enable this country to recover economically. So on this Workers' Memorial Day, the Blue-Green Alliance is calling for OSHA and the Secretary of Labor, Eugene Scalia, to immediately issue and enforce compliance with emergency standards to protect all workers, inform every employer and require them to inform every employee about these new rules and their rights and whistleblower protections under them, use existing authority and funding to staff up workplace inspections and enforcement to ensure employers comply with agency standards for personal protective equipment, sanitation, and hazardous substances, as well as their legally required obligation to provide a safe workplace. Use the existing reporting system for workplace injuries to document the illness and death of every worker who contracts the COVID virus. And work with Congress to provide additional funding that can be allocated to the 21 states that administer their own OSHA plans and suspend the requirement for matching state funding. In 2017, Donald Trump said, quote, I will never, ever apologize for protecting the safety and security of the American people. We think he owes an apology to thousands of American workers and their families because he and his Secretary of Labor have utterly failed at protecting working people during this crisis. We're going to start the call off today with Congresswoman Rosa DeLauro, who represents Connecticut's 3rd Congressional District. She serves in House Democratic leadership, and she is the chair of the Labor, Health, and Human Services and Education Appropriations Subcommittee, where she oversees our nation's investments in education, health, and employment, including the Department of Labor. She is also a friend who I admire and respect enormously. Rosa, thank you for joining us. Let me turn it over to you.
Thank you so much. And first of all, I'm going to give my comments, but I associate myself 100% with what you have said. Jason, it is so critical that we have standards that are protecting workers, and we are falling short, and we are really putting workers in grave danger today. And I thank you as a friend, but also as executive director of the Blue-Green Alliance, and your passionate advocacy for working people and the climate, and guiding this partnership of labor and environmental groups to be able to make the changes that we need. To be here with Michael Broun and John Shin, dedicated leaders as well, a dear friend, Randy Weingarten, a fierce advocate, you know, for for workers, for teachers, for nurses, and their safety, and David Michaels, Assistant Secretary of Labor for OSHA under President Obama, where we had the opportunity to look at issues, protections related to silica, beryllium, you know, et cetera. This is an issue that's very, very near and dear to my heart. And I'll just give me one second. You know, my mother worked in the old sweatshops in the city of New Haven, Connecticut. And I used to meet her there every day after school. And I watched the conditions in which my mother worked. And often in the needle trade, you got the needle in your finger, and you didn't go to a clinic. You didn't get a tetanus shot. What you did is you wrapped your hand in whatever piece of cloth you could find, because if you got a drop of blood on any garment, you wouldn't get paid for it. So the conditions that workers, their environment is critically important to me. And today we come together to observe Workers' Memorial Day. We honor people who have died on the job this year. And to do so effectively, we are calling on OSHA and the Trump administration to address the most urgent threat facing working people today, the COVID-19 pandemic. According to the Center for Disease Control, at least 16,000 health workers have been infected. At least 41 have died. And as states seek to reopen amidst the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic, worker safety has to be paramount and protected. I couldn't agree more, Jason. I, quite frankly, am tired of the word guidance. Let's deal by requiring or mandating instead of just providing guidance, which is goes nowhere. OSHA has been failing. You know, their mission, and I quote, to ensure safe and healthful working conditions for working men and women by setting enforcing standards and by providing training, outreach, education, and assistance. Their job is to ensure the safest work environment for every worker on a food processing assembly line, a delivery truck driver, nurse. They have not released enforceable emergency standards to protect workers. Instead, it's, as I said, non-binding guidance. They have not developed COVID safety training, nor has OSHA scaled up to the appropriate level of workplace inspection to ensure that employers are protecting worker safety at this time. The failure, quite honestly, of OSHA to protect workers' lives didn't start with this pandemic. But I believe it can be forcefully argued that it is failing to adequately address to this particular crisis. And sadly, other essential workers are getting infected from meatpacking houses, grocery stores, warehouses, and people are dying. Media investigation recently uncovered more than 3,000 COVID-19-related employee complaints filed with OSHA since the beginning of the year. The complaints span industry. The issues: lacking personal protective equipment, no hand sanitizer, soap, employers forcing employees to work in close proximity to sick coworkers. You know, and as the states begin to reopen the economy, OSHA has got to be morally responsible for upholding its mission to make sure employers are taking the necessary steps to keep employees safe from the pandemic. And in the Congress, we're calling on OSHA to exercise that authority and preparing legislation to compel them to do so. Look, I will just tell you, in a 2020 appropriation bill, we secured $582 million for OSHA. It was an increase of $24 million above the 2019 level. And the president's budget. So what I am fighting for in the next two packages that the Congress is dealing with, I am fighting for the inclusion of increased funding for OSHA and for workers' rights and workers' safety. And that's both in the CARES package and in the 2021 appropriations bill. Dr. Michaels can attest to, during the Obama administration, produce a rule, to spread of airborne diseases like coronavirus in health workplaces. The Trump administration should move that to rulemaking quickly. And in the meantime, they need to take a look at their guidance. We have more than ample evidence of the grave danger that this virus presents to workers. Some states, close to 20% of coronavirus cases are healthcare workers. Clear, effective, comprehensive requirements is the only way to be able to guarantee people's safety. So OSHA must require employers to inform their workers of the emergency standards, post checklists for workers to inspect and report on COVID conditions in their workplace. It can be sure to protect employees who are on food safety concerns. They should create and staff both a hotline to receive complaints of violations and an enforcement team to investigate and to address them. They should use the existing workplace and injury reporting system for COVID. Illnesses and deaths should be reported and made public with the proper privacy protection. I'm the co-sponsor of the bill to push this protection, both introduced by Congressman Bobby Scott, and that you have the, for the frontline health workers, the COVID-19 Worker Protection Act of 2020, requiring OSHA to issue an emergency temporary standard to ensure healthcare facilities implement comprehensive infectious disease exposure control. Then, for all workers, the COVID-19 Every Worker Protection Act, requiring OSHA within 7 days to issue an enforceable emergency temporary standard based on CDC guidance to protect all workers from exposure in the workplace. One of the other things I'm doing, and I'll wrap up because you've got so many folks on the phone. But two pieces. Listening to what is going on in our slaughterhouses and in the poultry plants, you're trying to look at that issue. I'm calling on Secretary Perdue to protect workers by creating an intergovernmental task force to protect the food workers. We did this. It would include USDA, FSIS, the CDC. What we're trying to do is to make sure that we have safe workers and a safe food supply. And one of the other things we have done is in the CARES Act, we included $15 million to the Department of Labor, quote, to prevent, prepare for, and respond to coronavirus, including to enforce worker protection laws and regulations, and provided the department with the transfer authority for those amounts to OSHA. It did not include dedicated OSHA funding. So that's what we will be pushing for, resources to increase enforcement and inspectors, but also to get funding for the hardwood training grants to provide training webinars for workers so that they know what their workplace rights are about. And you should know, and we still haven't had a response to it, on April 8th, Senator Patty Murray and myself wrote to Secretary Scalia at about the $15 million in talking about enforcing worker protection laws and regulations. And I just said to date, we have not heard anything from them. Look, I am anxious to get to a place where we can do hearings or virtual hearings where we can use our oversight power to look into what they are doing or what they're not doing. So with that, let me just say it is Workers' Memorial Day, and we must ensure that OSHA is doing its job now more than ever. That is the way in which we can really honor people whose lives have been lost. Jason, let me turn it back to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Congressman DeLauro. Our next speaker is Michael Bruhn, the executive director of the Sierra Club, a co-chair of the Blue-Green Alliance, and a strong ally of working people. Mike.
Thanks, Jason, and good morning, everyone. As you just heard, I'm Michael Bruhn, executive director of the Sierra Club. Let me just first start by thanking Congresswoman DeLauro for your fierce advocacy on behalf of the American workforce And then, of course, also to thank John Shin, David Michaels, and Randy Weingarten, and Jason for all that you're doing every day to protect workers and their families. For everybody on the call, I just want to say I hope that you and your loved ones are healthy and safe in these really challenging times. It's in times like these that the most vulnerable in our society who are suffering the most, a strong and effective and morally just administration would do everything that it could to protect those who were most exposed. Instead, we have Donald Trump, whose reckless comments, weak actions, and stunning incompetence put us all at risk. The Trump administration has loosened the enforcement of air pollution safeguards, even though communities with high pollution levels are most at risk from COVID-19. It has been unable to develop a national testing plan, even though that is precisely what we need to protect jobs and to revive the economy. And the administration has neglected its responsibility to protect frontline workers, even though these workers are the ones who are feeding us and providing us health care, at great risk to themselves. So in the midst of this crisis, we all have to join together, work together, and collectively demand protection for all workers. We should do this not just because it's the right thing to do, even though it is, but because the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, OSHA, and the way that the Trump administration is enforcing the law are failing to adequately protect American workers. OSHA is supposed to be there to protect the health and safety of working people, but the pandemic has exposed glaring holes in both the laws and standards, and frankly, the administration has done nothing beyond provide lip service and guidance. OSHA is issuing guidance when it should be enforcing the law. The Trump administration has to get off the sidelines, get specific, and get in the game to protect working people. The administration must enact an emergency occupational safety standard for all frontline workers. Almost two-thirds of American workers are currently doing their jobs from the safety of their homes. But for the many frontline and essential workers docking in every day, staying safe at home isn't an option. We are grateful for all those workers who are risking their health and risking their lives to keep our nation healthy and fed, and to ensure that we all have access to the vital resources that we need. We owe it to them to secure their safety. Back to you, Jason.
Thank you, Mike. Our next speaker is John Shin, the International Secretary Treasurer of the United Steelworkers. John previously served as the Steelworkers District 4 Director, which includes the great state of Connecticut, as well as other northeastern states and Puerto Rico. John? John, if you're speaking, you're on mute.
Sorry, Jason. Good morning. I just want to also thank Representative DeLauro, who's been an outstanding workers advocate her entire life, Mike Broom, Dr. Michaels, Randy Weingarten. I appreciate everything you've all done to help workers' safety and promote it over the years. Today is Workers' Memorial Day. It's a somber day we observe every year in the fight for safe jobs. This year, our union is remembering the 29 workers who were killed at USW-represented workplaces over the last 12 months. As we do every year, we are also renewing our commitment to fighting for workers' health and safety. It's an honor to be on the call today with friends who are strong advocates working to ensure safe and healthy workplaces. During this pandemic, many steelworker members have been and continue to go to work each day in chemical plants, paper mills, hospitals, power plants, and many other workplaces. Our members and all workers have a right to a safe workplace. Over the course of this outbreak, safety has been the number one concern from our membership. Those who are working are concerned that they are endangering themselves and their families. And those who are not going to work are worried that their job is going to be there if this emergency is not handled correctly. Under this administration, OSHA, the agency responsible for America's workplace safety, has left workers to fend for themselves during the biggest health crisis in recent history. As Representative DeLauro said, There have been thousands of complaints to OSHA about hazards related to COVID-19. Instead of inspecting and fining employers, the agency is merely asking employers to investigate complaints themselves and take corrective action. And OSHA still does not have an enforceable infectious disease standard. Our union joined the AFL-CIO and other unions in early March, asking OSHA to put out an emergency temporary standard to protect workers from COVID-19. This administration has refused to use its authority to protect workers during the pandemic. So this year, on Workers' Memorial Day, the Steelworkers Union is mobilizing to fight for the safety of all workers by supporting H.R. 6559, the COVID-19 Every Worker Protection Act of 2020. This legislation would require OSHA to put out an enforceable standard for COVID-19. Our members is also pushing for a massive increase in appropriate PPE for all workers, protections against retaliation, more rapid and reliable coronavirus testing, and a system for reporting and tracking workplace infections. More importantly, decisions about workplace safety during this pandemic must be made based on science and worker involvement. I want to thank all the other speakers on this call for joining us in the fight this special day. Together, we must mourn for the dead and continue to fight for the living. Jason, back to you. Thank you.
To quote Mother Jones. Thanks, John. Up next is Randy Weingarten, the president of the American Federation of Teachers, whose 1.7 million members include nurses and healthcare professionals, teachers, government employees, and higher education faculty and professional staff. Randy?
Thank you, Jason. Can you hear me or no?
I can hear you.
Great. Fantastic. So I want to actually thank, I also, Jason, want to thank you and thank Michael from Sierra Club and John, of course, from Steelworkers and my, you know, long-standing friend, David Michaels, who actually taught me more about epidemiology. But he's probably taught me more than anyone else in life. And then, of course, Rosa DeLauro. And Rosa, who is basically all of our congresswomen, men and women, any worker in America, knows that Rosa is there fighting for us. It is really important that Rosa and Bobby Scott have introduced H.R. 6559, and it's really important that that bill gets is part of the next CARES Act, if not beforehand. You know, you would not normally think that the union that represents paraprofessionals, bus drivers, teachers, social workers, psychologists, and with the fastest growing, actually, healthcare or nurse union, which we are, you wouldn't think that our professionals would be the ones who are screaming from the rafters about the failure of OSHA to do its job. But we have been pushing for the last decade to get even a health standard, which hospitals have been fighting us against, because of the focus, from their perspective, on profits and on money, as opposed to on people and on staffing ratios. But what we've seen in this crisis, as others have already said, is that it has exposed every fracture, every inequality, and has widened those inequalities and has shown the lack of regulation that could actually be helpful to protect workers and to protect the health and safety of the people we serve as well as the people we represent. And why am I so mad? Because when I see a worker that we represent in New Jersey, a transporter who actually is now dead of COVID-related issues because he did not have the appropriate PPE, I'm really angry. When I see that 80 of our nurses in one of our facilities in Columbus, Ohio, have tested COVID positive because they have not gotten the kind of PPE that they need
and that we do begging instead of actually being able to use an OSHA standard, then I am mad. If I tell you that we have over 75 teachers and other paraprofessionals and bus drivers who are dead now from COVID-related issues because they did not have the proper PPE, you can see why I am mad. These are deaths that were preventable if they had the proper protective equipment. And the only way they're going to get the proper protective equipment, people find them to be heroes all across America. We appreciate the gratitude that people have for all of these frontline workers. But the only way they're going to get it is if we have a standard. And that means, because the Trump administration has not done it, will not do it, we need an enforceable standard. And that is why right now, today, we have filed from 10 states over 40 OSHA complaints about what is going on in hospitals, in schools, in other frontline facilities right now. If we don't find a way to protect those who are protecting us, who will? And so today, on this day, which is sorry that I get this emotional about it, but on this Workers' Memorial Day, we, the AFT, are doing a Do Your Job OSHA Day of Action. I invite all of you to actually use the hashtag Do Your Job OSHA, and I invite all of us to actually listen to the frontline workers like Debbie White from New Jersey, who told me this in the last few days, and I quote, "It is unconscionable that these employees still have to work with the defective equipment at this late date in the global pandemic. As a union, we are advocates for our workers and our patients. Healthcare workers need to be able to work safely without fear of contracting the virus and transmitting it to other patients, coworkers, or their families. They must have genuine N95 respirators, must be tested for those respirators to ensure there's a seal of the mask around their face. If it's not sealed, it's not safe." That is only one in any number of issues that we have had to contend with. The retaliation, the lack of voice, the lack of equipment. We as a union are spending over $2 million trying to find PPE across the globe for the people that we represent. This is immoral, it is untenable, and we need the help from this administration. If President Trump says that we have to treat people safely, then he better do what he needs to do that. Thank you, Jason, very much.
Thank you, Randy. Your passion is entirely welcome and completely appropriate. We now have the longest-serving administrator of OSHA in the organization's history, David Michaels, who was the Assistant Secretary of Labor for OSHA under President Obama and oversaw the agency from 2009 to 2017. David?
Well, thank you, Jason. I'd like to also thank Congresswoman DeLauro, Randy, John, and Michael, and you for your leadership in fighting to make this government one that fights for people rather than corporations. The coronavirus has created a massive workplace safety crisis. It's enormous. Many of the first workers exposed were hospital and nursing home staff, and more than 20,000 of them have been infected. Now, when most of us are sheltering in place at home, either because we can telecommute or because we've lost our jobs, essential workers are being exposed to this deadly virus as they harvest crops, process meat and poultry, stock grocery store shelves, or operate public transportation. At the end of every day, these workers hurry home to their families, praying they don't infect their partners or children or parents. If we're going to reopen the economy, we have to make sure not only are all of these essential workers safe, we have to make sure every worker returns to a safe workplace where strict controls are in place to stop virus transmission. We can't reopen the economy and continue to make people sick. But look, we've had this invisible worker safety crisis even before this pandemic began. More than 4 million workers suffer serious injuries on the job every year. There are no reasonably accurate estimates of the number of work-related illnesses that occur every year, Although even before this COVID epidemic started, probably 50,000 workers died annually from exposure from occupational diseases. Much of the burden of these conditions falls on low-wage workers, making work injuries and illnesses a major component of the growth of the nation's economic inequality. Injuries and illnesses block low-wage workers from entering the middle class, and they push better-paid workers into poverty. The failure of the workers' compensation systems around the country to provide adequate benefits for these workers forces many of them onto taxpayer-supported programs like Social Security Disability Insurance. OSHA, the organization I ran, should be front and center in our efforts to protect all workers. The agency's dedicated career staff have great expertise in worker protection, and the agency has issued useful guidance about COVID-19. But guidance is non-enforceable. The thousands of infected workers, meat workers, transportation workers, farm workers, retail workers, thousands of sick workers are powerful proof that recommendations alone are not enough to stop this deadly epidemic. Secretary of Labor Eugene Scalia should be loudly and passionately demanding that employers provide whatever is necessary to keep their employees from becoming infected. The OSHA law prohibits employers from retaliating against workers for raising safety and health concerns. Yet when workers are fired for lodging complaints about safety conditions in their hospitals or their warehouses or their meatpacking plants, this administration is mute. Look, it's true that even an enthusiastic OSHA would be fighting its battles with one arm tied behind its back. This administration, though, is not enthusiastic about protecting workers. The OSHA law is weak. The agency is under-resourced, and its standard-setting process is lengthy and Byzantine, and so many hazards are unregulated. But OSHA's weaknesses have been magnified under President Trump, reflecting the low regard the president has for the health and safety of the nation's workers. OSHA has not had an assistant secretary since I left more than 3 years ago. There hasn't even been a nominee for the position in almost a year. Half of the senior executive positions are empty, and while the nation's workforce has gotten larger and larger, the size of the inspectorate is the smallest it's been in more than 40 years. It would take 165 years for OSHA to inspect every workplace under its jurisdiction just once. This crisis has underscored the value of a safe and healthy workforce. We see the vital importance of the previously invisible low-wage workers who grow our crops, process our meat, and ensure food gets onto our tables. In this crisis, we now recognize that these are essential, indispensable workers, and we have to ensure they're safe, not just for their sake, but for ours as well. So this Workers Memorial Day, let's recommit to strengthening OSHA to protect all workers, so that every worker in this great country is able to return home to their family and their community at the end of their work shift, safe and healthy. Thank you very much.
Thank you, David, and thanks to all of our speakers. Operator, let me ask you to open up Q&A. While we're doing that, let me flag a report that was issued today by our colleagues at the National Employment Law Project that reveals that we now have the lowest number of OSHA inspectors since 1975 in the middle of this pandemic. There are significantly fewer OSHA inspectors and OSHA inspections today than during either the Obama administration or the Bush administration. Operator, let me ask you to turn any questions that we have from reporters.
If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. A voice prompt on the phone line will indicate when your line is open. Please state your name before posing your question. Again, press star 1 to ask a question. We'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions.
As folks are preparing questions, let me just quickly repeat the demands the Blue Green Alliance is making of Secretary of Labor Scalia and OSHA. Immediately issue and enforce compliance with emergency standards to protect all workers. Inform every employer and require them to inform every employee about these new rules and their rights and whistleblower protections under them. Use existing authority and funding. the staff up workplace inspections and enforcement to ensure employers comply with agency standards, use the existing reporting system for workplace injuries to document the illness and death of every worker who contracts the COVID virus, and work with Congress to provide additional funding that could be allocated to the 21 states that administer their own OSHA plans. Operator, do we have a first question?
Yes, first caller, please go ahead with your question.
Hi, this is Emily Kopp with CQ Roll Call. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, great. I learned from the Department of Labor that employers are only required to report coronavirus cases to OSHA if they are exposed and hospitalized within 24 hours, which is not really how coronavirus symptoms present. So I wanted to get a response to that, and I wanted to ask also more generally if, you know, the folks on this call think that we have a full picture of the number of workplace clusters there are across the country, or if there could be clusters at warehouses that we're not aware of right now.
This is David Michaels. I'm happy to take this question. So I think there are a couple of parts to this. One is I think OSHA may have miscommunicated. The requirement is that the employer report the hospitalization within 24 hours of the hospitalization, not actually of the exposure. But the larger problem is OSHA has essentially said that any corona disease case outside of healthcare should essentially be considered non-work-related. The default is not work-related. OSHA wouldn't be getting any of those reports anyway, but the by essentially having a default that the case is not work-related, unless there is, as they put it, objective evidence that it is work-related, which is pretty much impossible to find, the likelihood is most employers will simply say that case is not work-related. And the reason that's significant is not because OSHA needs to get these reports, because OSHA is only going to do a limited number of inspections. But when a case is considered work-related and an employer records it on their OSHA log, that is supposed to trigger an investigation by the employer to figure out what's going on, that the workers are getting sick. And by OSHA giving every employer a pass to say these are not work-related, there will be no investigations, and employers will do nothing to prevent future cases from occurring. So the idea that these cases are not recordable is a very unfortunate decision by OSHA, and one that will lead to more cases of coronavirus in the future.
Thank you, David. And to your second question about whether we're confident that we actually have an accurate count of clusters at different workplaces, we do not. We don't have the testing in place. I mean, I think we've all seen reports from the Smithfield plant in Sioux Falls. We know only because people started getting sick that 600 people connected to the plant have contracted the virus. Two workers have died. Workers at the plant had access to hand sanitizer only after the first confirmed case. And then after it was clear that COVID-19 was present in the plant, Smithfield offered what they call a responsibility bonus of $500 to employees that didn't miss work in April. So we only know that because of what happened and the tragedy around it. Until we test and test comprehensively, we're not going to know where these infectious hotspots are proliferating. More workers will get sick. Businesses that try to reopen will have to close. And any opportunity to reopen this economy in a sustained and sustainable way is going to be absolutely lost. Operator, let's go to our next question.
Jason, this is Rosa. One of the things that, because you brought up the meat inspection requirements, what we're going to be asking, what we need to do, is there needs to be a suspend and maintain the suspension, the granting. They need to suspend these requirements, including the increases of line speed, revoke prior line speed waivers that have been granted. We are allowing these people to move at a rate standing next to one another. If you've been to a poultry plant or a slaughterhouse, you see the conditions in which they currently work. And now with this pandemic, you know, where are the social distancing and the physical barriers to reduce potential exposure and spread? They are doing none of that. When I talked to the Secretary Perdue on the phone, and the plant manager, somebody, you could only wear a mask if the plant said you could do it. What is wrong? Why are we allowing this? Excuse me. So.
Thank you, Rosa, for that important addition. Do we have other questions from folks?
Yes, next caller, your line is open.
Yeah, this is Mark Gruenberg from Press Associates Union News Service. This is sort of a confluence question for both Michael Gruen and Secretary Treasurer Shin. With the administration basically giving a free pass to every single polluter you can think of, coal, oil, you name it, that only makes things worse for those workers. Can we quantify how much worse, in so many words, for workers and for the people who live around those plants, places like Anacortes and Galveston?
Let's go to Mike first and then go to John. Mike?
Sure. Thanks for the question. I would say first, yes, it does make things worse, and no, we can't quantify, in large part because EPA has not been tasked with documenting clearly when enforcement will be loosened, why the enforcement will be loosened, and is not, similar to OSHA, staffing the inspectors to actually make sure that the health of the nearby communities are being protected. This is one big reason why the Sierra Club launched a FOIA request last week, not just on EPA, but on some of the biggest polluters in the country at some of the most polluting facilities in the country, to get clear documentation of which companies have engaged with EPA to request that pollution standards be reduced, what were the circumstances under which they made those requests, what were the dates that would be applicable for those requests to be in effect, and what are the possible risks to public health. None of this is adequate because we'll be getting this information after the increase in pollution levels, but at least will help us to hold accountable those officials who aren't doing their job once again.
Thank you, Mike. John, can you add to that, please?
Yeah, good question. Obviously, it's going to make it more challenging for us, but that's why we have union shops out there taking care of this stuff. Our members that work inside the workplace with these exposures also live in the neighborhoods where these exposures are going to. So we are strongly monitoring what's going on in our facilities, chemical, steel, smokestack industries, and we haven't seen anything reported back at this point, but we do have our local unions contacted about this, and they're keeping an eye out to see what type of impact this does have.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
Unfortunately, we are out of time, so I apologize to reporters who might have other questions. You can certainly follow up with us offline. I want to give a big thank to Congresswoman Rosa DeLauro. I want to thank our speakers, Mike Gruen, John Shin, Randy Weingarten, David Michaels. I want to thank all of you who joined us for this call. You've heard a lot of passion on this call. We are passionate, and we're angry because OSHA needs to do its job, and we are demanding that it does its job, and we're demanding justice for workers around the country. So with that, let's close this out. Thank you all for joining us, and we'll wrap this up.